Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us. This is the special session, the special invited session on access, workforce capability, and grant funding of the mental health system. My name is Margaret Mattson, and I'm the moderator of this session. All of our speakers today and I are from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, or SAMHSA. And we're all members of the Center for Behavioral Health Statistics and Quality, which is the surveillance and analytic arm of the agency. The topic for today deals with the mental health delivery system and three important components that influence its ability to improve the nation's mental health. These components are access to mental health care, second, the capacity of the mental health workforce, and third, the distribution of agency grant money for mental health services. A common thread running through the presentations today is the use of geographical information systems, or GIS methodology, a data interpretation tool that's currently being used in many epidemiologic inquiries. The infancy of this approach can be traced to the famous observations of Dr. John Snow during the London epidemic in the 1850s, when he traced the epicenter of the cholera epidemic to a particular contaminated water pump where the cases clustered. Since these early days, the GIS methodology has become quite sophisticated and is increasingly used when the research question involves correlating health-related variables with their location or spatial distribution. The presenters today have used three different data systems produced by SAMHSA and have applied GIS methodology to gain new insights and into how the community environment influences access, capability, and funding. Given that the public health intervenes, or given that public health intervenes at the community level, looking at these types of questions geographically makes sense and is a natural evolution of our focus on people and their surrounding environment. The format for today is we'll hear each of the presenters in the order in which they're in your program, and then at the end we'll take questions for all of the presenters. Our first presentation is by Dr. Chandler McClellan. Dr. McClellan joined SAMHSA as a service fellow in the Health Economics Financing Team in 2014. His primary research at SAMHSA focuses on issues relating to insurance, cost of care, access to care, and the impact of economic conditions on behavioral health. Chandler completed his PhD in economics at Georgia State University and did postdoctoral research intern assistantship with the National Bureau of Economic Research. Today, Chandler is going to address the question of how the prevalence rates of mental health illness relate to the distribution of federal grant funding for these disorders.
Good morning, and it's a beautiful day in a beautiful city, so I know I was tempted to ditch, so thank you for being here. I hope that you made the right choice. I look at the program funding and mental health. Are we funding those in need? Standard disclaimers, the views that are expressed here are my own and in no way represent SAMHSA or the Department of Health and Human Services, and there are no financial relationships to disclose. So just a quick background on the discretionary grant process, SAMHSA's discretionary grant process. SAMHSA, the Center for, specifically for this presentation, the Center for Mental Health Services, puts out requests for applications for grant dollars. In these application requests, there are certain review criteria on which the application and the subsequent decision will be evaluated. The applicants then fill out their application, of course, and in that application usually is a portion of the review criteria. There is a statement of need where the applicant can make their case that they need the grant dollars. It then goes into, once it's submitted, it goes into a review process. The review process is impartial by external reviewers, experts in the subject matter who are chosen by SAMHSA. Only application material is considered in that review process, and so the reviewers can't take into account any sort of other information that they know. They can only consider the information that's contained in the application, and the application is reviewed only solely on its own merits. So it's really incumbent on the applicant in this case to put together a strong application for the review. The decision is then made, the application is given a score of 1 to 100, and a decision is made on whether to grant the applicant grant dollars or not. A summary statement is sent to the applicant. And this process represents about $321 million in funding from the federal government that goes through this process. The real big question that we're trying to get at here with this research is need accounted for? And so asking how well does this process address observed prevalence in mental health and mental illness? There are a couple, if we're funding programs to combat mental illness, then it's important that we actually fund those programs in areas where mental illness is high. But there's a question of whether this is actually happening because, for one, well, on SAMHSA's part at least, it could be that we're not actually taking into account the mental illness prevalence in an area, which would certainly be a big issue for SAMHSA. But it also has there are a couple other channels that the prevalence of mental illness could slip through the cracks. One is this process really relies on the applicants, grant applicants. If those grant applicants don't really emphasize the need for mental health in their area, then the review process can't take that into account. The review process has to rely only on the material in the application. There also could be some access issues for areas with high prevalence of mental illness in that these areas might be poor, have fewer resources available to them, and so they might actually not submit grants or apply for grants in the first place. And so that could be another large selection problem where the grant funding isn't going to the places in need. And so what this really gets at is the effectiveness of grant dollars. If we think about where we want to spend our money, it seems plausible that areas with high rates of mental illness are probably a good place to send a bunch of money because you're going to have a big, big impact with those grant dollars. So what you really want to do is grab that low-hanging fruit first and get all the best bang for your buck. And then if you think about grant dollars having diminishing returns, as you get that low-hanging fruit and you spend a bunch of money on those really easy cases, well, then what's left are the harder cases at that lower prevalence. And it takes a lot more money to try to address those, and so there are these diminishing returns. So if we want to really spend our grant money for mental health effectively, then we really want to target our grant money towards areas with high prevalence of mental illness to kind of get at those really easy cases to begin with. So to answer this question, to get at this, use a couple different data sources from SAMHSA. The first is NISDA, National Survey for Drug Use and Health, Substate Estimates of Mental Illness. These are offered in 3-year increments. And I used 2008 to 2010 and then the 2010 to 2012 data. They're broken up into two separate time periods because the substate definition changes slightly from time period to time period, so they're not directly comparable, so we have to break them up into two portions. And then for the grant awards, we turned to SAMHSA's discretionary grant award system and looking specifically for mental health prevalence, look at Center for Mental Health funded grants. And again, there's a potential reverse causality issue here if we look at contemporary grant dollars, where if we looked at grant dollars distributed in 2008 to 2010, these could be going to areas and having an impact, and so you would actually see lower prevalence of mental illness in those areas. So to kind of get it to address that issue of potential reverse causality, I look at only at grant dollars are funded after the sub-state estimate period. So for I pair the 2010 to 2012 funded grants with the 2008 to 2010 sub-state estimates, and then again the 2013 to 2015 with the 2010 to 2012 sub-state estimates. Very quickly going through the methods, use GIS to geocode and aggregate the funded grant awards using ArcGIS 10.1. Then, as a matter of a statistical analysis of the relationship between grant dollars and needs, is done in R3.2.2. Looking at the statistical model really quickly for the per capita award, grant dollar award, I use a pooled cross-sectional Poisson model. A Poisson distribution is appropriate for this. The per capita award, because there are many zero, it's truncated at zero, you can't have negative grant dollars. There are many zeros, and then there's a very long tail indicating a Poisson distribution. The three variables of interest are AMI, any mental illness in the sub-state area at the time T, SMI, which is serious mental illness prevalence in the area I at time T, and major depressive episode prevalence in the past year for time in area I and time T. I'll also include several control variables, demographics such as percent white, percent black, the natural log of the population density, so people per square mile, some economic controls in the vacancy rate and rental rate to try to get at some level of income, and then the age distribution with the number of adolescents, young adults, and elderly, and then gender. And then finally, I include a vector of state fixed effects or state level fixed effects to capture state level non-varying factors, and then a vector of time trends to capture any differences between the two time periods. Going through the results. So this is the results, the sub-state prevalence of any mental illness from 2010 to 2012, very quickly. You can see there are fairly high prevalence rates in the Northwest and through the, let's call that the Appalachia up into the Northeast, maybe a little bit in Oklahoma. But you can see through the central of the United States, the Dakotas and Texas, fairly low levels, and then again on the coasts, on the southeastern seaboard, and then the California coast, much lower prevalence of mental illness. And these categories are in quintiles, so there's roughly 20% in each, 20% of the sub-state areas in each category. But you can see, if you look at the legend, that these are fairly normally distributed as far as prevalence goes. So that's the 2010 to 2012 data. And I turn now to 2008 to 2010 and continue on with the 2008 to 2010 data, but with only the caveat that both those maps are pretty much the same as you can see here. Again, you have fairly low prevalence through the middle of through the central United States and on the California coast and southeastern coast, higher rates in the Northwest and up through the Northeast. So very similar to the previous map, and so we're just gonna look at the 2008 to 2010 sub-state estimates for interest of time. It's a similar story with the 2008 for serious mental illness prevalence. Lower rates, of course, but again, similar geographic dispersion, where you have that low prevalence through the central United States and on the coast. And again, for the distribution of major depressive disorders or major depressive episodes in that time period, maybe a little bit less on the eastern seaboard. The eastern seaboard is probably a little bit closer to the average there, which is represented in yellow. But yes, a very similar picture as far as geographic dispersion of mental health issues. Turning now to where we actually fund our discretionary grants, these are actual geolocated points of cities where a grant program was funded. Not surprisingly, there are many clustered in the high population areas along the Washington to Boston corridor, that northeast coastal corridor. Los Angeles, San Francisco see high concentrations of funded grant programs. But then if you look, they seem fairly well scattered throughout the United States. No real other geographic pattern other than the what you would expect. They're clustered in high population areas. So taking that population into account, looking at per capita awards, and these are, again, per capita awards from 2010 to 2012 on the 2008 to 2010 sub-state regions definitions. Looking at these, there's not a very clear geographic dispersion. A lot of sub-state areas have no grant awards awarded to them in their areas, which is understandable. We wish we had a whole lot more funding, but we don't. But then if we look at the areas with very high levels of grant awards, they're fairly scattered throughout the United States, and it's certainly not concentrated in those areas that we saw earlier with high levels of prevalence of mental illness. So just to kind of taking an eyeball look at it, we're not seeing the same patterns, but again, looking at things with and just drawing ad hoc conclusions on it is probably not the best idea. So we turn to our statistical model and model actually the impact of the mental illness prevalence on those per capita award dollars. As we can see from our top three variables of interest, any mental illness is not statistically significant determinant of grant dollars. Serious mental illness, this is statistically significant at a 10% level. A lot of people would probably take umbrage at that and say we needed this at 5% level. So you can even say that the serious mental illness isn't statistically significant determinant. And even if it is, it's a negative. It's negatively correlated with per capita grant dollars. And then again, major depressive disorder is not statistically significant either. So looking at these regression results for the pooled sample, it seems pretty clear that mental illness is not being taken into account when we distribute our grant dollars. And so that's actually a pretty interesting, important finding for us, at least at SAMHSA. And there are a couple of different things that could be going on there, which we'll talk about in a second. But the other thing that this model can do is kind of examine the relative distribution of grant dollars and see which areas might be getting more than their fair share, or actually might have more resources available to them for them to get more than their allotted amount. And so if we assume that this model, this statistical model, is the correct model, and calculate our fitted values, and what our expected awards would be based on that statistical model, we can see that we would want low grant dollars, a low funding level for the entirety of California, again, through the center of the United States, specifically Texas, Minnesota, and then along the eastern seaboard. New York State has a particularly low expected value for that grant dollars, whereas areas that you would expect to have high levels of grant dollars, again, the Northwest, the Northeast, and then even into some of the western states there. Again, same map for the 2013 to 2015 expected awards. And again, you see a very, very similar geographic dispersion of expected awards with the Dakotas, New Mexico, Arizona, and then the New England states expected to receive a very large share of, and of we always leave out Alaska and Hawaii, don't we? Alaska and Hawaii getting a fairly high share of grant dollars based on what you expect from that statistical model. Comparing this with the actual dispersion of grant dollars, we can see that there's actually it seems that California, even though, yeah, California was supposed to get a low level of, or expected to get a low level of grant dollars, but we can see this significantly outperforming, as is New York and especially Massachusetts. But compared to the actual grant dollars that those western states get, Montana, the Dakotas, Nevada, Utah, you can see that they're actually significantly underperforming what we would expect them to get. And again, for the 2013 to 2015, again, Massachusetts, California are kind of hitting out of their league as far as expected grant dollars. And then, interestingly, through the Dakotas and northern Arizona, or New Mexico, you see high levels are sub-state areas that are receiving a lot of grant dollars in excess of what we would expect them to see. So there's a lot of unexplained variation in a lot of areas that a lot of areas that are receiving more grant dollars than would be expected. So quick discussion. Mental health, or mental illness prevalence is not, doesn't seem to be an important determinant of mental health grant dollars. A few different reasons that this might be. First, the high prevalence areas might not be not be applying. Again, it gets to these access issues that they might not have the resources to apply. Again, it could be that when the applicants are filling out their grant applications, that they're not incorporating sub-state estimates into their statement of need. They're not expressing that that they have high levels of mental illness and that they need these dollars. So it could be a failure there, or it could be a failure on part of the review process, where the review process isn't adequately taking into account the prevalence as an indicator of need. We saw that relative the distributions of grant dollars is important. There are a number of states and sub-state areas that are hitting out of their league, so to speak, where they're getting a lot more grant dollars. And this is important because, especially from federal government point of view, we want to ensure that the distribution of grant dollars is somewhat fair across areas, and so when we're thinking about what's fair across areas, we want to take into account the prevalence of mental illness, as we did, but then we want to see where areas that have higher concentrations than what would be expected, what would be fair, given the levels of conditional and mental health areas on mental health prevalence, some areas will get more money than others, and that's not necessarily the best from a equity standpoint from the federal government. One way to address these issues is to create area-specific grant opportunities. So right now, most grant opportunities are open to across the United States to anybody who wants to apply. But this, I think, points to the fact that maybe we could say, look at areas with high prevalence of mental illness and make grant opportunities specifically for them. There are some certain limitations to this study. As we talked about Quidel, there are some selection issues where people have to decide to submit the grants. Areas with low resources might not select to submit grants. So we need to think about how to model the decision to submit grants to kind of address that issue. Another issue, potential issue, is aggregation level. We're looking at mental health prevalence at a sub-state area. As y'all saw, those areas can be quite large sometimes, and these grant programs are fairly small, single programs in cities or such. And so it might be that a city could have high levels of mental illness, but the surrounding area, the surrounding sub-state area, would have lower rates of mental illness. And so those would average out, and when you aggregate up to that sub-state level, that high need in the city is washed out by the low need outside of the city. So there are certain aggregation level issues here that a finer gradation on the mental health prevalence measure would be nice to have. Unfortunately, we due to the limitation of the limitations of the NISDA, that's a high hurdle to jump over. Another question is the regression model the correct distribution formula? So we kind of, for purposes of this presentation, we just kind of assumed that that model that was estimated was the quote-unquote correct distribution. But it's certainly not necessarily the correct distribution. It did take into account mental illness to some extent, but it's really agnostic on whether that's the right measure or the right weight on mental illness. It also doesn't take into account a couple of important areas that CMHS looks at. One is the suicide ideation. A lot of the CMHS grants are targeted at suicide prevention, and again, that was not accounted for in the model. And so if you go back and look at the kind of the unexpected variation, if you remember, the Dakotas and New Mexico and such had fairly high levels, were hitting above their weight. Well, those areas are home to many Indian reservations, and as we know, the Native American population is at a higher risk for suicide ideation, and a lot of those grant dollars are actually being spent on suicide prevention in those areas. So certainly the regression model isn't necessarily complete. Again, it doesn't really, it's fairly agnostic on what levels we should fund at. But it does give us a better understanding of who gets more than the expected share. So in conclusion, areas with higher prevalence of mental health issues need more grant dollars. It's getting at this, getting the most bang for our federal taxpayer buck. The current grant review process doesn't seem to adequately take into account sub-state prevalence, at least in this narrow application, and then also relative distribution, who's getting what also matters. So, thank you very much.